I'm Vermont Edition producer Sam Gale Rosen. This podcast has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Over the weekend, violent clashes in Charlottesville, Virginia, led to death when 19 people were injured and one died after a vehicle plowed into a crowd that was protesting a rally held by neo-Nazis. Heather Heyer was killed, and 20-year-old James Alex Fields from Ohio has been arrested. Other people were wounded in exchanges between the far-right group protesting the planned removal of a statue of Robert E. Lee and counter-protesters. Unsettled by these events, rallies popped up around the country in the last 2 days and continue into this week. Last night, people gathered in Hanover and Burlington, among other places. Another event is planned in Rutland tonight. Vermont likes to think it's immune to this kind of violence, but Charlottesville is also known as a welcoming place, with the University of Virginia serving as a draw for many different kinds of people and ideas. Today on the program, we're going to offer you, our listeners, a place to gather and reflect, to offer thoughts and questions, to talk about what we can do here to address the issues we're seeing in Charlottesville and nationally. I'm joined for this conversation by Tabitha Pohl Moore, president of the Rutland Area NAACP, which is sponsoring the event tonight. Tabitha is at the VPR studio at PEG TV in Rutland. Tabitha, it's a pleasure to have you joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
David Minditch joins us from WHYY in Philadelphia. He's the chair of the journalism department at the Klein College of Media and Communication at Temple University. He recently left a position as a journalism professor at St. Michael's College, and we thought he'd be a good person to talk to about how the media responds to these kinds of events. David, honorary Vermonter, I suppose. Nice to have you back on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tabitha, I'd love to start with you because I know you've planned this rally in Rutland for this evening, and maybe you could just share your reactions, your thoughts about what happened in Charlottesville and why it made you feel like we need to gather in Rutland City tonight, why Vermonters should be gathering in this kind of way.
Well, I guess I'd start with my reaction. I don't think I'm different from many of the people in my horror and fear and disgust, especially as a woman of color. This is a very threatening message. As you know, in Vermont, we don't have a very high percentage of people of color here, and we are kind of spread out throughout the state. So I think it's really important for us to be able to be seen and be visible and be heard, especially in times like this. And at the same time, we have many white folks in Vermont, you know, we're known as a liberal haven, who feel similarly, who are shocked and horrified and want to do something and provide a counter voice against the hatred that we're seeing.
When you say provide a counter voice, how do you think that matters? What does that do when there are people in Rutland City and people in San Francisco and people in Boston and people in New York City doing this? Does that gathering of people around the country saying no do something, Tabitha?
It does. It unites us as a country and really starts to make clear what our values are or just make them known. I think they've always been there. I think the majority of people in our country do want to do the right thing, that they do believe that hatred is wrong. I had a conversation earlier today with a woman who we politically have very different views, but ultimately in her heart, she knows hate is wrong, but it's figuring out how to have those dialogues with people that we know that maybe support some of those views that are negative or painful to particular subsets in our community.
David Minditch, what do you think? Reflect on what Tabitha's saying.
Well, I salute Tabitha's work here, and also to underscore what she said, not only does it send a message, but it also sends a message of political importance. We just witnessed over the last few weeks the failure of the National Republican Party to gut health care. And this was in large part, because of protests by individuals and collectives throughout the country to say, don't take our health care away. You know, we have a country that has the Supreme that is dominated by one political party that has the Supreme Court and both houses of Congress and the executive branch, and they couldn't pass this bill. Why not? Because of protests like that's going to happen in Rutland and all over the place. The will of the people is still a powerful political force.
You know, when we look at what happened in Charlottesville, though, and Heather Heyer dying, she was going to do just what you guys are talking about. And from what we've heard in news reports from her friends, she was worried about potential violence and the potential threat to herself. Mm-hmm. Tabitha, is that something you worry about?
Yes, but my fear of dying standing up for myself is not as big as my fear of dying not standing up for myself or dying at the hands of, a broken healthcare system or a system that doesn't see or value me or other people in marginalized positions. You know, silence is compliance. And so for me, I need to stand up so that I, my children, and all Vermonters know that equality is valued.
Listeners, I'd like to hear from you on this. What are you thinking after the weekend? What are you talking about? What are you doing? Do you agree with Tabitha that we have to stand up? Do you see a way to have conversations in Vermont and wherever you are, whether you're listening here or thinking about things in other places? How do we bridge these divides? How do we have these conversations? Can we have these conversations? Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe saying to the white nationalists and neo-Nazis who were in Charlottesville this weekend, get out. We don't want you here. You do not belong and you're not welcome. So is there a way to have a conversation that, I don't know, brings us closer together or not? Are we at a place where we just can't do that? David Mindich?
Well, you know, it comes back to the question of balance that was mentioned at the top of the hour about, you know, is it appropriate for Donald Trump to offer blame on many sides? That's his quote, mm-hmm. many sides. And the answer is no. We can't balance every political question and try to give equal weight. Neo-Nazis and KKK members and white supremacists really do not belong in the mainstream conversation. We, as journalists, we send people out all the time to cover a story. Let's say it's a story about a murder. We don't say, you know what's missing from this murder story? A pro-murder voice. It's absurd, right? There are things that we as journalists, as media producers, do not include in the public debate. We don't include, you know, outrageous statements. Unfortunately, in the last few months, we've seen outrageous statements coming from the White House. The White House is normally a place where, you know, at least in our lifetimes, that facts matter. That that there's a certain spirit of decorum, mm-hmm. Certain reaching out to Americans of all types, even, you know, Republicans or Democrats. It doesn't matter who's been in the White House. There's been a sense that there should be a unifying voice. It hasn't always been that way. Reagan famously started his his presidential campaign by visiting a white southern city, a southern city that, and he appealed to white supremacists by saying that we believe in state rights. It was the very spot that that civil rights workers were killed. So, I mean, there have been these abhorrent statements, particularly by white conservatives. But generally speaking, we've had unifying voices in the White House, and that's completely different in the last 6 months. It's just been horrible.
Does it feel more horrible to you, Tabitha, as well?
Yes, we've certainly noticed an uptick in anxiety and even the number of incidences that people are saying, you know, this is happening to me, this is happening to me. One woman talked about how she walked out of Price Chopper. She was just minding her own business. And a man walked up to her and he was extremely angry and said, you know what, Black Lives don't matter. And she wasn't doing anything. She was just shopping. So these incidences are certainly occurring more frequently, even here in Vermont.
Our number, if you'd like to share your thoughts, maybe share your own experiences, is 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. We got a comment from Ray who says, we all need to be aware of the hateful and violent ideologies that some people possess, and we need to do what we can to counter those ideas with facts and education that can help to lessen the appeal that such horrendous notions can have to some. And Gordon is on the line with us from Northfield. Hi, Gordon. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Hi, Jane. I just want to deal quickly with what some people might write off as mere semantics. Like David and others, I'm Jewish. I call them Nazis, plain and simple. All right sounds like a computer keyboard shortcut. Calling them Nazi sympathizers, using the word pathos, suggests that they are capable of pathos, and I don't see that they are. A Nazi is a Nazi is a Nazi, and, you know, many of us have ancestors we never got to meet, because they were worked to death or gassed to death or incinerated. And I think it's time just to call them what they are and be right up front about it. They're Nazis.
Gordon, thanks for your comments. Professor Mindich, what do you think about that? The semantics and the words that we use when we have these conversations, in our own conversations, but also particularly in the media.
Well, you know, I think that the news media have been doing a pretty good job of, for example, calling out Trump on the many sides comment. But I think that we've been doing a less effective job at understanding kind of the pervasive white supremacy of the Trump administration. And I'm reminded of the 1993 trial of the Rodney King beatings, and where the jurors just saw little pieces, very, very small snippets of the video, and they saw the whole video but only in little parts and couldn't really understand the entirety of it. In the same way, we're looking at a Trump administration that Trump has said that, you know, he believes that suspects should be roughed up. He's rolling back LGBTQ rights in the workplace, examining affirmative action and going to take measures against affirmative action. We've got Sebastian Gorka and Steve Bannon, white supremacists or white supremacist sympathizers in the White House as his advisors. Healthcare has rolled back protections for poor people and people of color, that was the aim, than to give a big tax break to the wealthy. I mean, these are like of a piece. They all collectively spell out an administration that's anti-people of color, anti-poor, and really trying to privilege white people who are affluent. And it's, you know, precisely this kind of climate that you see in Charlottesville, with people protesting their rights, these white privileged people protesting their rights.
What do you think, though, then, is the role of reporters, of journalists? I mean, you're the chair of the journalism department now. You're teaching the next generation of journalists to go out and how to do this. So what is our role in terms of figuring out the right balance, figuring out the words to use, especially at a time when no matter what you say, frankly, you're going to be called fake news by somebody?
You know, it's a really difficult balancing act, because on one hand, you want to be measured. You want to be a reliable a witness for people of all political parties. So we're training journalists to be detached. And yet the words that I just used were hardly measured and detached. I mean, I come with a particular perspective. The old journalism motto, comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable, you know, is something that I subscribe to. So I don't feel like I need to tell people what political party that I'm a member of or what political candidate I support, but I do feel that it's a journalist's right to protect the least fortunate, that to have values that include protecting people's rights, introducing various groups to one another, examining one's own prejudices, things like that that oftentimes will go in the face of what the Trump administration is doing, including their very loose use of facts. Whether it's a Democrat or a Republican, if someone is not telling the truth or not getting the facts right, that's one of our jobs, to hold leaders accountable. And the Trump administration has just made it really difficult to be, on one hand, factual and an honest witness, and also being an advocate for those who are least fortunate.
Tabitha Pohl-Moore, where do you fall on the what you want to see journalists doing? Now, you know, you're not a journalist. You're representing the NAACP here. So you come with a perspective as well. But where do you see, where do you push against what you see the media doing?
Well, I certainly appreciate over the past few years the increased attention to issues of civil rights and the fact that we're now paying attention to all of the black and brown bodies in the streets because it's been going on for so long. So I certainly appreciate that. I'm always wary, or even when I'm even called for an interview, that I don't want to be set up, and people of color certainly don't want to be set up for a media battle. To just, you know, put a person like me in a situation with somebody that it clearly is on the 100% opposing side just for the show. So that's the type of media that I would not want. I do think responsible journalism does include paying attention to one's own values and perspective, and how does that affect how you present or who you choose to interview. I think thus far into this Trump's administration's tenure here, it's been really kind of difficult for journalists to navigate, especially with that constant label of fake news out there everywhere. And people are just kind of using that as an excuse, either not to believe what they're reading or not to look into it. Yeah, I guess I just it's a really tricky question. Responsible journalism with sources that would be easy for the layperson to trace would be really important.
Yeah, certainly is. We're talking today, we're reflecting, we're kind of going in a lot of different directions, but looking at what happened in Charlottesville, Virginia, reflecting back on how that's affecting our own lives in many cases, what we're doing about it, what's happening in our own communities, and we'd love your perspective, listeners, as we have this conversation. I'm talking with Rutland Area NAACP President Tabitha Pohl-Moore and with David Mindich, who recently left St. Michael's College to become chair of the journalism department at the Klein College of Media and Communication at Temple University. And we're hearing from many of you as well. Julia says those wondering how these issues translate to Vermont need look no further than the Rebel Alliance movement in South Burlington. At best, tone deaf, and at worst, openly racist. I have been truly disturbed by what I've read on their Facebook page. Let's go to Luke, who's calling in from Richmond. Share your thoughts with us.
Well, I guess the main first thing that came to me last night as I was watching some of this stuff on the internet is that how quickly we forget. I'm 61, and I certainly wasn't around when World War II was happening, but people seem to forget what Nazis did and how many, never mind the Holocaust, which people seem to forget, but all of the soldiers from this country and innocent people from all other countries died because of Nazis. And as far as the gentleman from Northfield goes, I agree, a Nazi is a Nazi is a Nazi. For all the blood that has been shed in the name of what the fools down there and who are involved with fascism say, what do they think? What would they think if some of the millions of people who died back then could see what they're trying to bring back now? It's just mind blowing that this can happen. And another thing I wanted to throw in, because of the Black Lives Matter and anything that's affiliated with Black Lives Matter, everybody has been more on that side trying to do what Martin Luther King said, which was nonviolence. But you know what? When you turn the cheek and it gets hit again, I think people should get what they give. And I can't challenge anybody to understand my view. Somebody on the show said a little earlier, I'm challenging myself to speak up when I see stuff going on right around here. There's guys that drive by my house every day with a giant Confederate flag flying in the back of their truck, just daring somebody to do something. And I wouldn't do anything, but I want to say something to them. I just think you don't have to look too far to see what's going on, and people need to speak up loud and clear.
Luke, thanks for your comments. I appreciate hearing from you. Tabitha Polmore, what about that idea of speaking up? Is that something that you see as a way that people are or can or should take action in their own communities?
Yes, I definitely think it's the first step, and that's part of why we chartered this branch of the NAACP here, is because we need to be visible and we need to make it clear where we stand and how we feel, even if we're afraid. It's not a choice, especially now.
You know, you hear often, though, the questions from white people mm-hmm. on issues of race who say, what can I do and how can I speak up? And that question of speaking up, you know, you say, sure, we should speak up for ourselves. Mm-hmm. But depending on who you are, what you look like, mm-hmm. what your gender is, where you live, you know, a whole host of situations, you may be in a very vulnerable position. So is it the responsibility of people who are in less vulnerable positions to speak up? And are there times when keeping silent is actually the safest thing that you can do for yourself and your family?
That's an excellent point that you're making there. Yes. There's always a risk in speaking up, no matter what group you belong to. However, for people in the marginalized positions, we've been saying this for so long and we're exhausted. And so we need people in those positions of privilege to do this is their war. This is their fight, because the white supremacists came from the white community. And as much as we want to reject them and say they aren't who we are, we don't believe in that, they're not us. Whether you feel that way or not, you are still part of that same group, at least on the outside. And so I do think it's the responsibility of white folks to be the ones to challenge. And whether that comes in the form of, you know, hey, I really don't want to hear those racist jokes, you really need to stop, or questioning people about why they hold particular beliefs about refugees or Muslims, or questioning schools about how and when we learn about minority communities. Those are all different ways that people can get involved and speak up without necessarily having to come out to a rally, though we welcome everybody. But there are plenty of ways that you can be that voice. And it certainly is the responsibility of those in the privileged position to dismantle the system.
Can I just add to that? Mm-hmm. So my mother, more than 50 years ago, marched in Selma, Alabama. And she was pregnant with my twin brothers. And I'm always reminded, like, whenever I have these moments of saying, should I speak up? You know, am I nervous about this? And, you know, if my mother can march pregnant in Selma, then I think that the rest of us, particularly living in Vermont, but, you know, anywhere in the country, I mean, the chances, as terrible as the violence is, was over the weekend, generally speaking, for most of us, the physical threat is pretty low. For people, white people of privilege, the risk is even lower. And so I completely agree. We need to stop people from making racist jokes. We need to call people out on that. We need to, I mean, the other thing is that this is kind of a plug for my field. We need to follow the news. A lot of people say, you know, the Trump administration's so stressful that I've just tuned everything out. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I don't give my friends permission to do that. I mean, I certainly don't give myself permission to not follow. We need to know the cabinet appointments and what they're doing, and the Supreme Court and what it's doing, and Paul Ryan and what he's saying. And we need to know all that stuff, because we need to be it's not going to be comfortable, but we need to be super informed so we can be super energized. And that goes for not only people on the left, but people on the right as well. Everyone needs to be more engaged around the facts that we can all agree on and the policies that we disagree on, because we need to have intelligent political conversations. And I also plug finally for a conversation, which is that when people from the left and the right discuss things, they tend to see that also they might be completely split on some issues, but not so split on other issues. I'm not talking about having a conversation with a Nazi or a Klansman. I'm talking about just having conversations in the reasonable center and the reasonable among reasonable Americans who can come up with solutions in a tolerant and respectful way.
Let's go to Dean calling in from Greenwich. Hi, Dean. Go right ahead.
Hey, how are you today?
Fine, thanks. You?
I'd like to just preface my statement by saying that I totally hate Nazis and white supremacists. I'm dead set against them, as I'm sure most of your listening audience is. That being said, I don't understand how it's been politicized so much. All of a sudden, with the tragedy that happened, we take that tragedy and we twist it into, oh, it's Donald Trump and it's white America. It's the Republican Party. They're causing this hate. They're causing this racism. It's Bannon. Bannon's such a hate-filled monger, yet he's a supporter of Israel. It's funny to me that Donald Trump has Jewish children, and yet he's called an anti-Semite. It's because of him that we have this Nazi hatred. Yet when there's a Muslim attack, we as normal Americans don't say, well, all Muslims, they're all bad. They're all horrible people. If there's a Black Lives Matter shooting on a police officer, we don't say, well, these people in Black Lives Matter are all terrorists and all black people that are Democrats are horrible people. We don't do that. Yet we do stereotype white straight males. And being a white straight male, being born this way, is just the same as if I was a black man born a homosexual. I can't change the way that I am.
But let me ask you, Dean, when you say you think all straight white males are painted with the same brush, really? You think all straight white males in America are seen as Nazis?
Well, let's put it this way. Being told that I'm a white cis male, in my opinion, doesn't matter much by people from Antifa, is kind of disheartening. That my opinion doesn't count because of my skin color and because of my sexuality. Now, when Antifa goes through and systematically attacks people with, remember that college professor, he hit somebody with a bike lock. We didn't condemn their entire movement. We didn't condemn college students and the entire left. I mean, there was a shooting in D.C. by a major leftist, and it would be insane for us to say, the left is murdering people.
Dean, I take your point, and I want to put this to our guest to get some reaction to what you're saying and thinking. Tabitha, what are your thoughts on Dean's call?
Well, Dean, there's several things that you kind of mentioned there that we could go into. I think probably the main one is this idea that when something happens in a minority group, that they're not treated the same way as if the perpetrator is white. And I think that when you talk about Black Lives Matter, you got to talk about why it exists. And the reason it exists is precisely because people of color have been stereotyped. Because when Tamir Rice is playing with his little toy gun, he's seen as a threat, as a little black boy. So I think that's not quite a true statement. We are stereotyped. We are put into those categories. And also, as a woman who is in a heterosexual marriage, when my gay brothers and sisters say to me, Tabitha, it's your time to sit down, I say, okay, because my marriage is reflected everywhere in this society. So I don't really feel like I need to have any more privilege in that arena than I already do. gosh, there's so much there to say, Dean. I guess I'd want to know where you'd want to go with it.
Yeah, and this is a starting point. Let's say this about this conversation. This is not obviously a conversation that we tie up in a neat little bow and say, "Great, we did it."
Right.
Thank you, David and Tabitha. We figured it all out. I appreciate your time. So, you know, it is an ongoing conversation,
right.
And that question of where do you want to go with this? You know, that's an interesting one because these conversations tend to go in a lot of different directions, and sometimes they are helpful and sometimes they're not. I've been looking on the Standing Up for Racial Justice Middlebury Facebook page, which is an open group, and seeing some conversations about neighbors having interactions with other neighbors who have been flying Confederate flags and what that looks like and getting a little bit of a better understanding, but also still challenging themselves. So I do see these conversations happening around the Vermont, but we also see a lot of, oh, this could never happen here. You know, this is a different kind of place. So we're having this conversation today, but it's happening in other places, but not everywhere. Let me get another call in here from John in Saxton's River. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Hello. Well, it's a really big problem, and but we do have to take some kind of action. I think we should have legislation. We should go to the law and ban, actually, Nazis and neo-Nazi groups. Perhaps you remember, we fought a big war. A lot of people died.
Yeah, John, you know, you're one of many people reminding us, you know, we've fought this war. Many people saying we thought we fought this war. We thought we finished it. David, we're very short on time, but is legislating our way out of this a possibility? Can we outlaw Nazis?
Well, you know, the United States has this tradition of free speech, and I don't think that we can do that. And I don't think that we'd want to, as much as I, you know, abhor Nazism, in part because I'm a Jew and in part because I'm, you know, an American and as a citizen of the world. I don't think that legislating is the goal.
David,
discussion and yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And as I said, I appreciate you both being here, carrying on this conversation, continuing it, because it certainly is ongoing. David Mindich, no longer at St. Michael's College, now chair of the journalism department at the Klein College of Media and Communication at Temple University. He joined us from WHYY. David, thank you.
Thank you.
And Tabitha Pohl Moore is president of the Rutland Area NAACP. The event they're having tonight in response to Charlottesville is at 6 p.m. at the Main Street Park in Rutland City. Tabitha, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Vermont Edition.